Welcome to VentureCast. I am David Hornick from August Capital.
And this is Howard Hartenbaum, also from August Capital.
And we have a special guest today, the return of the prodigal VentureCast son.
That's right.
Craig Severson from...
Yahoo Incorporated.
Yahoo!
I think this is going to be the I Told You Show. Told You So Show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because, like... Last time I did when I did last VentureCast, I was telling you, you know, I got to move on to this thing. I said, you know, you should bring Howard on because, like, you and Howard would be great together. And you were like, Howard, that guy, that'll be awful.
And then
look what happened. I mean, since
and it's,
you know,
so awful, we brought you back.
Yeah, right. You're just gonna, like, try and referee is actually all you'll be doing on VentureCast today.
No, you didn't say it would be awful, and I think you guys have done a great job of the show. I think it's really relevant and interesting. And
now that we've picked up all this extra traction, you want it back.
I don't want it back.
No. That means you occasionally listen. That's exciting. I know you listen because you post the video. I keep saying, like, Craig, okay, teach me how to, like, edit the thing to get up. And, you know.
You'll learn.
All right.
You'll learn.
Son, we'll tell you. You will learn.
The other I told you so is that many moons ago on a show, you'd mentioned Yahoo. And I said, Yahoo! You know, blah, blah, blah. I did my whole kind of, you know, Web 2.0. That's not cool. And you were right. Yahoo's pretty cool. I mean, having been there now for a few months and seeing kind of what it takes to do that, to run that company.
Are you running it?
I'm not running it. I should be.
Yeah, we'll fix that.
But, I mean, it is an amazing, you said it was an amazing business. And I, you know, I was just skeptical because it wasn't hip and cool. And it's really not hip and cool, but... It's still amazing. It's still amazing what the scope of it, you know, being there and seeing how big it is and how big of a ship it is to turn, that it's really fascinating. I think Carol's doing a great job.
So you, I'm sure you can't really talk about it, but you're sort of doing social media stuff, right?
Right.
Can we say that much?
We can say that much, right? And, you know, there have been a couple deals announced recently. Well, Twitter was announced this week, and Facebook.
Yahoo bought Twitter?
No.
Yeah, Howard, where have you been? You didn't see that? Do you know, I think they would honestly, if Yahoo bought Twitter, they would stop traffic on 280 and 101. People would just stop. It'd be a little bit like an earthquake. Everybody would stop. Everything would stop for like 7 hours.
In the Bay Area, people would just be dazed.
Yeah, be like, oh, man, Yahoo bought Twitter. Have you heard? Have you heard? Have you heard? Have you heard? That's what it'd be like.
Twit.
You heard it here first.
Yes, and last.
It's happening any second now. I was chatting with Ev, and he was telling me that Dick was a Yahoo.
That's
or something like that.
Right.
And I interpret that to mean... it's kind of funny. They had on... I saw on Tech Meme the other day. Maybe it was yesterday. Something about... some company doing diligence on another company. Like, someone got wind of diligence being done, which I'm not sure what they meant, what they thought that meant. Like, someone called up and asked a question about it, and suddenly...
Who was Facebook doing diligence on something?
Yeah, who were they doing diligence on?
Don't remember.
I don't either. But, right, they said, oh, Facebook is doing diligence.
So?
Yeah. Who determined this? Someone said, hey, have you worked with Ryan? How's that guy? And then suddenly it's like, oh, that's me news.
That's diligence.
It's almost like all the news again about Apple.
Yeah.
All you have to do is put a bill of materials about anything related to Apple. It could be they're buying like swag. And it's like news.
Did you see the latest patent application?
No.
And then about the ability to, when you're on a call, to wave your thumb in front of the camera lens to, like, mute it or...
that's cool.
If you're listening to your voicemail, you can, like...
Fast forward. So gestural motions in front of the camera.
Which is on the backside of the thing. Patent application went in.
I'm pulling out my iPhone
that's
to
weird.
See how...
I think you're gonna...
Oh, totally. Look at this. You put your finger up.
They had a picture in the application and it's the thumb. No, it's
Oh, that's not going to work.
I think
that's terrible. No, try that. Can't be the thumb. That's not
I can't hear you.
That's not even possible.
Four fingers over the microphone.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gripping the phone like I grip my penis.
Oh, dear.
With
for
one
example.
Finger.
If I were. You're hilarious. See, now, I apologize for that reference. On the other hand, we had an earlier penis reference when we were off the air, and I thought it was hilarious, and so I just want to, like, you know, prompt this from Mr. Severson and Hartenbaum to see if they can repeat their... You're not...
Not even going there. Just, you can't taunt me. But speaking of diligence, congratulations on Aardvark.
Oh, right? Yeah, Google right. Did some, they did some diligence. They said,
"Well, they just bought it."
They say, "Here's the diligence. Hey, did you guys leave Google?
We didn't
come back here. How much will that cost? $50 million? Okay.
About $50 million in a Tesla.
If we'll take you back,
right.
We'll take you back. Yeah, you know, it's anyway. Thank you.
Yes.
I mean, we invested Howard like a year and a half ago, something like that.
Yeah.
About a year and a half ago. Really excited about the team. Excited about this idea that subjective questions weren't being answered well, and so. It was one of those things, like they figured out interesting technology, interesting ways to go about it, built in a fantastic team. And so I suppose I shouldn't be surprised or mm-hmm. upset about the fact that Google's noticed and like a little bit like a spider.
I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they sell companies and they do afterwards. It's not the feeling that they expected afterwards, because it's a little bit anticlimactic. You know, they built their company and it's so exciting, and then they're suddenly back in a cubicle.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that these guys were excited about, and I give them total credit for that, is that, you know, Google said, gee, we're going to push this thing out, and you have a big audience, etc. And obviously, if you sell to a Google or a Microsoft or a Yahoo, now a Facebook, it's a huge platform, right? You have huge reach, you have a ton of opportunity to get at those people. So, now, we happen to all have seen many, many times when that doesn't actually work and that doesn't actually mm-hmm. happen. But I will say that was one of the things that was exciting to the Aardvark team. They were excited about it. And so I was sorry to see them go. As I told them during the process, like, I enjoy your playground and I like playing in it. So
I'm sure they're going to miss your jokes at the board meetings.
Oh, they'll be so sad.
Yeah,
so deeply saddened to lose me.
They told me they sold the company because they were sick of board meetings.
Yeah,
they're sick of Hornick. If all of my companies start selling at virtually any price within a year, about a year and a half, then we'll know when you reach saturation.
or you have a bad breath problem.
About a year and a quarter. Yeah, about a year and a quarter, you go, really? We're so over it. We're so over it. Which is a shame, you know, because, I mean, I think I've got a good 2.5 years worth of jokes in me. So
I'm
you're losing
you
out.
Do,
you're losing out on a good, nearly a year's worth of jokes. I feel badly for these companies that I've been working with 5-6 years because I mean, you know, I'm literally on.
You can
repeating
see it in their faces.
It. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like the fatigue is sort of daunting, isn't it?
Did I tell you the one about when I was in high school?
They're like, you know what, David? It's just not that entertaining when you say "fuck" at board meetings anymore. Like the first time, it was vaguely novel. But by year 6, the 8,000th fuck is just not that entertaining. Now I've destroyed it. I've said penis and fuck, and we're never, and my mother listens to this show, and we're never going to get on mainstream media.
We can go back and bleep out all those bad words.
I could do it for you.
Fuck that.
Beep that.
Anything else get acquired? Anything else acquisitional that we'd like to talk about?
I think there was an IPO, though, right?
That is true.
Tesla did their IPO?
Well, they're on file, right? They got that Tesla on file thing. And then we have, oh, man. What's the name of it?
I'm just waiting for you to say it. I know what it is.
Oh, you're a jerk.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, the lead gen company that went Quinn Street. See, you forced me to like suffer through that.
That was good. Your memory recall is good.
I was once driving on this train from like Munich to Berlin or something, and I started chatting with this girl on the train, and so I was
things were going pretty good until you realized it wasn't a girl.
No. That's not where the story is going. And I was working so hard. Like, I had studied German in school, so I was working so hard to come up with the German words. And I'd been suffering through German for hours, and we're approaching Berlin, and I was like, God, what's the word for such and such? And I said it out loud, and she said, blah, 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 in German, you know.
Right.
And I went, you speak English? And she said, well, of course I speak English, but you were doing such a good job, and you were working so hard, I felt like it was only fair to let you try and speak German.
So Quinn Street was on the tip of my tongue, but I thought
hours I suffered. That was good. Quinn Street. Yeah, so Quinn Street got out, and you know, and that's it. That, so you know, it'd be nice to have an IPO market back out, and then what do you think? I mean, is there going to be an IPO market?
I think it's going to be a while. I think financial markets are getting a little bit more turmoil.
More
in the short term. Just in the short term. I mean, all the stuff going on in Europe with Greece and uncertainty and housing starts going down. I think things will slow down for a few months before they... But I think it's coming. It's going to be happy days again.
Europe. So, you know, speaking of Europe, I mean, Europe's certainly not doing any favors to the internet, right? I mean, putting
it's illegal to put videos onto the internet.
it is illegal to allow people to put a bad video on the internet among thousands that go up.
Amongst 20 hours per minute of upload, if you don't catch the one, you could be liable.
Yeah. So, I mean, those of you listening who don't know to what we are referring, an Italian court just found Google liable for placing a video on, for not placing, for allowing a video of a group of kids picking on a kid with Down syndrome to be placed on YouTube service. So just to be clear, YouTube didn't know about it. They didn't say that YouTube knew about it. They took it down when they knew about it. But someone placed this video, which was, it sounded like a horrible video. I'm not defending the video by any stretch of the imagination.
It was probably, the video was probably made by Berlusconi's agency and then put up there to see what.
Okay, now, like, I'm not. That's just. I'm not going there. I'm not saying Berlusconi did it. You punk. I mean, I'm just saying that. This is the whole. So this is the DMCA, right? This is exactly what the DMCA was written. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act says if you are a hosting service provider and you provide a system whereby videos can be taken down when you are informed of their illegal content, etc., then you're protected from liability, and that's the law in the United States.
The safe harbor.
Yeah, it's this DMCA safe harbor thing, right?
No, that didn't apply in Italy, obviously.
Nope.
But it doesn't apply just to American companies. It just applies to regional jurisdictions.
It applies in the U.S., right?
Yeah,
so, it would apply to international companies doing business sued in the United States. Then I believe extraterritoriality would apply, as they say in the legal mumbo jumbo. But the problem is that the European courts are, they got their own rules and they're going about it their own way. So, you know, so now suddenly what? Is YouTube supposed to preview all video that goes on?
Well, that's what they want. That's what the Italian government wants, because they know that it's not technically possible.
It's absurd, right? It's not going to happen. So the alternative is what?
Shut it down.
Right.
Which is what they want.
Because?
Why?
Well, some people might hypothesize.
Yes, right.
It's because some key members of the Italian government are involved in the entertainment and television industry, which Google is crushing.
Yeah, they sort of own it. They run it.
So what way to deal with your competitors then to have the power to put them out of business legally or illegally?
Yeah. No, it's all this sort of weird protectionism. So the one that also gets me is there have been a number of suits in the United States and in Europe alike where eBay gets sued because knockoff products are sold on eBay, right? So if you go and you search for Rolex or whatever, you know, some percentage of those things that are being offered with that brand are knockoffs, right?
Right.
Which, again, eBay doesn't approve of, they don't want to happen on their site, and they police the best they can. And if you locate them and point it out to eBay, they take them down. In the United States, the courts have said that's sufficient for eBay to not be liable for the infringing behavior of those counterfeiters. But in Europe, in France, the French brands have sued, and they have on a couple of occasions won, and you know, against eBay. And so again, what is eBay supposed to do? Are they supposed to police every item that comes in? You know, they could do maybe for that particular brand, right? Okay, we're going to look at the French luxury brands and make sure that it is, but it's huge volume, and it's going to be a major impediment to e-commerce, right? So what are American companies supposed to do? Are they supposed to shut down the internet? You know, not
right in the other countries.
Yeah, well, like, there'll be no French internet.
Well, if the French want no internet, they can shut it down.
Le eBay, no more.
Yeah, Vente Privé, no more.
Yeah, well, and, you know.
There'll be a riot.
Well, Vente Privé, but Vente Privé will go, you know, they control their inventory, right? So maybe it's protecting a Vente Privé. It's protecting a, because Vente Privé isn't counterfeit goods, right? It's not. It's these seconds.
How do you know it's not counterfeit goods? All right, well. Vente Privé has more people, I bet, use their service every day than people who vote.
So what is it? I think we've talked about Vente Privé, but
Gilt. You know. It's Gilt is a copy of Vente Privé. If you're familiar with Gilt, Gilt is a service where every day they send out millions. I bet now 2 million emails to their regular customers, who are predominantly women, at exactly the same time every morning, 9 o'clock, and they have certain very great deals on brand, high quality brand purses, for example, and then it's a feeding frenzy on who can buy them as fast as possible
before it sells out.
And it's a great business, and they're doing, what, $150 million?
I've heard more. I've heard more. They maybe, And then you look at something like Woot. Woot doing like $250 million in the same kind of model of we have a bunch of these you know, leftover products that need to
Superman
be moved.
Superman pajamas.
For example. Is that what you bought?
That's what I want.
On Woot?
That's what I want.
And is that because you think you're a Superman or because you just need pajamas?
I just want to walk around the house wearing Superman pajamas with a cape. Everybody has their own fantasy. You know mine now. It's not that bad.
If you, in fact, get Superman pajamas, I will make you a cape.
I'll wear them to the lucky.
No. There's no, you don't. The only one wearing a costume at the lobby is me. Just to be clear.
Yes, I got you on the first year too.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's right, Greg. In fact, you were Ricardo Montalban to my Hervé Velázquez. That was good stuff.
Oh, that was classic material. Oh boy!
And if you look on the web, you can find a shot of me and Craig in our white suits, living large. Craig slightly larger.
I got to drive the cart.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's
how it goes.
That's how it goes.
That's how you roll. So yeah, so we got Vente Privé, over $1 billion in sales. We've got Gilt Group doing a bunch of stuff, and so now these things are popping up like weeds, right? I mean.
So Rue La La was a similar model.
Yep.
It was just bought by GSI Commerce, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And then what was the other one we saw?
Ideally. And there's others that are kind of similar to it, like what, One Kings Lane?
So One Kings Lane, yeah. So started by Ali Pincus, who basically said, look, you know, why not home goods, like, you know, sheets and pillows, etc. So I have sitting on the other side of my desk some adorable baby blankets.
Are you having another child?
I am not, but if a friend of mine does, I've bought these adorable baby blankets that'll make a lovely baby present. And they were
a
great deal.
In preparation for your friends having children?
Do you have any idea how many children are had every year?
No.
I mean,
look at his family.
186,000 a day.
It turns out they're a lot. Even, you know, plus we back all these young entrepreneurs. Eventually, they're going to procreate.
And you'll be ready with your baby blanket.
I am ready because you know what? Here's
That's
the thing.
That's why DFJ has DFJ logoed baby blanket.
Do they really?
Well,
that's awesome.
Lots of cool stuff. Like baby blankets, I don't think they have.
Oh,
so.
All right. Because I was thinking that was genius. Yeah, you want Tim to make those?
Yeah, I want a baby blanket, Tim.
No, if you could get him the cape. You could get a DFJ branded cape for his pajamas. That would be excellent.
He has some cool costumes, that guy.
He wears costumes. I agree. He sings and he wears costumes. He's giving me a run for my money. The only other guys who sort of are competing are the first round capital guys with their holiday. You know, their holiday card thing, sing and dance, and I respect that. You know, maybe we can get our partners to sing and dance for the 2010 holiday card. What do you think, Howard?
I'll hold the video camera.
I'll hold my stomach.
While our partner John dances. That would be good. I'll work on that.
So you mentioned a shoe thing, too, is another shopping?
Shoe Dazzle, I think, is the name of this one in Los Angeles, which kind of came out of nowhere, and in a year is doing a couple tens of millions in revenue. And it's just a slightly different model. In this case, you pay $40 a month, and they do a bunch of knockoffs of very popular women's shoes, and they help you pick the right one for you, and they send you a pair of shoes every month, and they're knockoffs. They're being manufactured in China, and they're very cheap, so yeah. the margins are very, very high for them. But it's this whole set of sense of inclusion and being getting access to the great things. And we're seeing lots and lots of different companies. One that we saw recently, which I thought was pretty cool, was this company called Mertado, M-E-R-T-A-D-O, which is a Facebook app. And met the guys, really, really nice guys running this company. And the first day I looked at it, they had this like Keurig coffee maker. And I was like, well, it's normally $80. It's only $40. So
test this
I buy
out.
It. And Better then as soon it. As I buy it, I see, well, wait a minute. They've got a Sony Blu-ray DVD, only $92. I bought that too. And then they come in the mail and I'm like, what the hell do I need this coffee maker for? So I have an eBay account and I put it on eBay and like I put it up and 3 hours later I've made money. I mean, I've sold it for more than I bought it for. So for all you eBayers out there, if you want to just go on all these different sites and buy all the overstocks.
Yeah, get the best deal you can come up with.
Chop them up into one pieces and you'll make money on it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it is. So the reality is that there's all this these leftover goods and... The old days, what? They only moved them by putting them in TJ Maxx and Marshalls, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's how... What else did you have?
Yeah, then outlet stores.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They had kind of... Right, they had the L.L. Bean outlet and the...
Still do, but...
And those were all awesome.
But that's not actually overstock anymore. They're actually making special products for the outlet store.
These days.
These days, yeah. These it's days. Not even the same product, and they're not even the same quality.
See, that's just wrong. That's
and they're marked. So if my wife went to down in Gilroy and bought some Nine West shoes, and then they fell apart. Like 3 weeks later, and so she's lazy, so she goes to the Nine West store in the Stanford Shopping Center, and they look at them and go, see this little mark on it? These are not real Nine. These were made at our factory in such and such a country, and these are low quality. And
of course they fell apart.
Nine West.
That was that. And so she's
that was
like,
Seven West. Those were Seven West shoes.
So if you're tricked into that, you're tricked.
Yeah. But anyway, but there's a ton of this stuff, and you know, you finish, you gotta get to the end of the season, and you want to move it, but you don't want to destroy the margins on your new products and all the stuff. And so, what do? And the old days, there were only a few channels, and now it's like, gee, there are a ton of channels and lots of these different models, and people are trying to figure it out. And what's stunning to me is how cheaply you can get these goods. Like, oh, get 1,000 of this thing or 2,000 of that.
That's just because we didn't know that TJ Maxx was buying items for 5% of their original list price.
Yeah, well, now we know. That's
we thought it was 50% or 60%. It was 5%. People were dumping, you know, 400 Prada bags for $8 each or whatever the amount was.
Wow. So, it's pretty awesome. I mean, this is why I like the web. Like, the web is awesome, right? Because eventually you can take advantage of these things, and you can... Once again, it's another fine example of the real beneficiary of the internet. American Express. Yeah, maybe the consumer. Maybe the consumer, but Amex. I mean, not Amex. What am I saying? FedEx. What am I saying? Amex American Express. Pay attention. No.
Amex is, thank you, Mr. Hornick. We would like to be a sponsor.
Yeah, exactly. Federal Express is what I meant to say. Although I do, you know, use my Amex. If you want to follow my Amex, you can go to blippi.com/David Hornick, one word, and you can see what I, you know, how I abuse my American Express.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I actually am serious. It's Blippi. You got to check it out.
So if you're voyeuristic and you like to know what your friends are buying, you can basically watch it on Blippi. And it's kind of fun. So
they have Hornick, to permission it, though.
Yeah, okay. That's true.
So, for example, Hornick went to Long's Drugs the other day. And he bought a box of diapers and a box of condoms.
Yeah.
And it was just a classic purchase there. Right. I'm looking at that going, all right, David, but you got him out of order.
Okay, just to be clear. Not true. I believe I bought
cough drops.
Yeah, it was pretty close. I did. I bought like Gatorade because my son was sick, and some Tylenol. But it's up there. You can go see it. It was at Duane Reade, as a matter of fact, in New York City. It says David Hornick spent $12 at Duane Reade.
And this is it's out syndicated on a feed, and I can.
It's a feed. You can go check it out.
Right,
it's
after
awesome.
Duane Reade, there was $300 at Cha Cha Massage. I'm just joking.
He's here till Tuesday. That Howard Hartenbaum.
Here till 2:40.
He's here till 2:40. Right. He's given us till 2:40, which means we get 20 more minutes of his shtick.
Shtick.
You should be on the borscht belt. Howard and Hartenbaum and Hornick and the borscht. So, by the way, Howard. So Howard has a new car.
And for Did you get your Honda Element? Your orange Honda Element?
No, he should have.
I know. Last time I was here, he died.
No, I bought a Toyota. And
sort of.
When I get pulled over, I'm going to say unintended acceleration.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
But Howard's on fire. He's on fire today. So you bought a new, you bought a new car, and you finally got a new license plate. And I drive up, and I see that you have a vanity plate. And I look at it, and it's says Love and Baum. And I'm like, Love and Baum, or Love E N Baum, or he's Love and Baum. Right. And I'm thinking, well, gee, Michael Baum, who we backed to founder of Splunk, is like really pleased that Howard.
So my license plate, yeah, for Michael. There you go.
But so I came up and I said to Howard's assistant, did you see Howard's car? He has the new license plate. She's like, yeah. Did he tell you what it means? And she looked at me like, what are you talking about? She said, I figured it out myself, David. I'm like, what does it mean? She's like, Hartenbaum? It so, just never struck me to think like heart, you know, because you always use the love. I just thought the heart was love.
So everybody that sees it, half of the people think it's really stupid. And the other half of people think it's, they just don't get it. And once they get it, they think it's really stupid.
So it's working for you.
So I like it as a vanity plate. You know, Howard H. was available.
Yeah, but you, really, didn't, you didn't go with that.
I'm surprised.
So I had a number of conversations. After I got my Mini, my kids said that I should get the vanity license plate Mini VC. They thought this was like the perfect license plate for me, which I sort of like that. But I was talking to James Currier, and I said, what do you think of this, Currier? Like, my kids think I should go with Mini VC. And he said, no, no, you can't.
I saw on Sand Hill Road a couple weeks ago a Mercedes with the license plate XL VC.
Well,
I didn't recognize
you don't know who, which one
wheel,
it was,
but I bet I know where he works.
Yeah, right. Well, was that with a C or an X?
Yeah. C.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, but Courier said, like, you know what, David? You already work that short joke so much. I think he's just bitter because he's so freaking tall.
Do you want to sell your Mini?
No. Why would I want to sell my Mini? Okay. Would someone want to buy it?
I got your buyer.
A few years ago, I was at Whole Foods, and there was this guy walking through, eating fruit. Just walking through, you know, doing what he wants to do. I turned around, saw his face. I said, that looks a lot like Steve Jobs. I left the store, out in front, parked in the red zone, right on the street on the red zone. This long black Mercedes, and the license plate said next.
Wow, so that's a ways back.
See, he was just like by picking up fruit and tasting it, and dropping it as he went.
Yeah, it was pretty.
It's cool to be Steve.
Yeah, right. Hey, excuse me, Mr. Jobs. Mr. Jobs. You know, there is this. I was hanging out with an entrepreneur earlier today, and he was in New York. He lived in New York for a bunch of time, and he recently moved to Silicon Valley. And he was talking about how cool it is to be an entrepreneur in Silicon Valley. That New York, you know, we were talking about this idea that New York celebrities are the people who are rich, mm-hmm. and oftentimes they're not, or more pathetically, like, their families were once rich. It's not even like that they are rich. It's that, you know, like, oh, well, I'm a Hilton or whatever.
Right.
And whereas in Silicon Valley, nobody, that's, who cares? Like, right? He was saying that he was hanging out with something with Tom Conrad, who's the CTO of Pandora. And the fact that people would, like, whisper, oh, that's Tom Conrad, you know, like, oh, good. And, which is hilarious, like, no offense, Tom, I love you, and you're a fun guy, you know, but you're not Paris Hilton. Right. But in Silicon Valley, Tom Conrad is like, you know, hey, that's the CTO of Pandora.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. In Silicon Valley, Tom Conrad is Paris Hilton.
Michael Arrington is Paris Hilton.
Okay. So who's Heather Hardy?
Tom Conrad.
So I do like that. I do like the fact that, you know, that you have the right cult of personality.
The meritocracy aspect of celebrity.
But they're still, I will say, you know, people, you stop. You see Steve Jobs and you do stop. Like, whoa, that's Steve Jobs. Yeah, that's Larry, Sergey, whoever, you know. Yeah. Like, that's just, you can't help yourself, right?
Yeah, I saw Sergey, like, on the street eating a burrito the other day with his family. You know, just, I didn't stare because I realized, I don't want to stare at
the guy. Don't be rude.
Right.
That's nice of you.
But I did take a double take.
So you just asked him for his autograph.
Well, so I just came back from the TED conference. Technology, entertainment, and design. And it's And it's always interesting in this respect because, you know, Larry and Sergey are there. Jeff Bezos is always there. There are all mm-hmm. sorts of very interesting people. You know, Paul Simon of Simon and Garfunkel fame is mm-hmm. there with his son. This year, Will Smith was apparently there. I didn't see Will Smith.
That sounds pretty elitist to me.
That's called leading the witness. Howard's saying that because I wrote this post on Venture Blog where I basically defended... Because truthfully, after every TED conference, there's this big discussion. Yeah. Last year, it was Sarah Lacey who basically said, "You know, screw you, TED. I'm not going to TED. Not that I can or I was invited, but I'm not going." Yeah. Now, I shouldn't be mean about Sarah because she's like, "I'm still going to the lobby.
Right.
You know, I like the lobby."
But
this year, Robert Scoble wrote a big article, you know, big blog post entitled something like "The Elephant in the Room" or "The Elephants in the Room." So, okay, look, I get it. It costs $6,000, and Will Smith is there and all that stuff, and there are a lot of people who want to go, and they can't go, and so that's, I understand that that's kind of elite and all that stuff, but they post all of these videos now. Millions, hundreds of millions of people now watch these TED.com videos. They have programs out there where you create your own TED experience, like the TEDx I'm going to have. So we could have TED, you know, August. Capital or TED, you know, Silicon Valley.
TEDx.
Yeah, yeah. Did you get to the Silicon Valley one or San Francisco one? Or
it was Miami.
Yeah, there's a Miami one. There's a Sao Paulo. There's a whatever.
Dubai.
I mean, they're really cool, right? Because, you know, there are plenty of smart people who are thinking and doing interesting stuff. So that's kind of democratized. So I called this post the democratization of TED or something. And I really think that Chris Anderson and the team who built it have done great things to try and spread TED.
They probably have students come in too, I would imagine.
They do. They have their own, they have a program and you can apply. And
I mean, face it, think can only be so big, right? It can't be.
That's what they said about Facebook 2 years ago.
that's a different dynamic, Howard. That's, big is good in that instance.
Yeah. Right.
No, I mean, it is this kind of interesting challenge. And one of the problems, so the great news about the internet is, right, suddenly, and the proliferation of video, and suddenly everybody has flash players, and so video is available to everyone, and it's easy to download, etc., is that suddenly these TED Talks that you could only see if you spent originally $3,000, right, now $6,000, they sent out DVDs. So if you went to the conference, you got a DVD, and then you'd show your kids or your friends, oh, check that out, or whatever that. Yeah. So its reach was kind of a few thousand people.
Yeah.
And suddenly with the internet, they literally, June Cohen, who runs the digital piece, said they'd served up 500 million videos, right?
Right.
Pretty awesome, right?
Pretty awesome. And they're excellently done videos.
Really, yeah, really smart guy. They're just well done, and they reach a big audience. So I think that's pretty exciting. But I will say I don't mind being one of the guys who gets to go to the conference. It's pretty fun. Really smart people talking about all sorts of interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know who was there? Moot. Do you guys know who Moot is?
No.
He's the kid who started 4chan. Anyway, have you ever been on 4chan?
No.
4chan is basically, imagine a message board that essentially disappears almost as quickly as it starts. So you start a post, and then people comment like crazy, and then it goes away. There's no history, right. There's no archive. And so this is the guy who started, and he basically, and it's all anonymous, you can say whatever you want, and it's, the volume is massive. And a huge number of the like interesting memes out there have started on 4chan. So things like Rick Rolling was started on 4chan, and Lolcat started on 4chan, all these things. But also, you know, as Moot said when he was talking, there are certain rules of 4chan. It's because it's anonymous and you can post whatever, not the place your mom should be going.
Right,
so,
right.
Betsy Hornick, like do not go to 4chan. This is one you should steer clear of.
So that's like the other night I tried out Chat Roulette.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go? What'd you
say? I sent it to David, and David's like, I hear it's not such great content. And the first person pops up was an attractive 30-year-old woman, and we chatted for a little bit.
Really?
Because
that was like winning the lottery, actually getting a woman in Chat Roulette.
And that was the first one.
Yeah.
I'm like, this works great. Perfectly matched to me. You know, she's attractive. I'm good. No. The next one I hit, it was like some kid, and he was just kind of looking around the room. And then I hit another one, and it was a guy masturbating. And I was just like, whoa. And that
and that's normal. By the way, that's not an anomalous experience.
And so I was like, I'm... this.
That was when you were done.
I don't want to see that.
So did you move on to the next guy or did you finish?
No, I was done.
You were like, oh, I'm out.
Because I was thinking it could be worse.
Trust me. No, it's apparently there's some wacky, troubling stuff that goes on in chat roulette. This thing started by a kid in Russia, I think, and it's been growing like crazy, and people are using it, but they're getting... that's the experience, right? Is this kind of... it's a roulette, you know, a little bit like Russian roulette. Yeah. Like, spin, click.
I was thinking
spin,
of doing it while
click.
I hold a gun to my head. Yeah. Until somebody sees it.
See, but like people might do that, but you know, you could see that. It'd be horrifying.
Yeah, I don't want to see that.
Do you remember Logan's Run? Where he had the roulette thing?
Yeah, right. This is right. This is the automated internet version of Logan's Run, right?
That's right.
It's pretty crazy, but it's growing. But like the web, I feel like the web continues to accelerate. Like these things become big and interesting so quickly that the question is, will any of them be sustainable, or do they kind of peak quickly, drop quickly? Like chat roulette doesn't strike me as something that's going to be a long-term interesting thing, but you never know. You know, one of my favorite things that
I sent the founder a note.
You did? Mm-hmm. What'd you tell him?
Just said, hey, what's your plans for the future?
He's been getting lots of those notes.
Yeah.
Because Fred Wilson blogged about trying to, like, I'll fly you to New York. Come talk to me.
So he responded to me right away, and he told me he wasn't going to respond to Fred.
Yeah, right. August Capitol? I'll fly out to California to talk to August Capitol. But that Fred Wilson, forget about it. Good for you, Howard. You're the man. Got the power of persuasion.
Thank you. I know you're insulting me in some way. I'm just not sure I get
I'm
it.
Not, I'm
it's
not.
A love and bomb.
Love and bomb. That's it from now on. Howard Love and Bomb.
It's like say it with that deep voice.
McLovin.
I'm surprised you don't see more license plates which are like I heart and then somebody's name.
I bet you every one of them is sold out. Go look. I bet you couldn't buy a single iHeart.
Howard is available.
You checked on that?
Because there's nobody loves Howard.
That's aww. Right. That is sad.
No, I asked my wife, do you want that? She's like, what are you, crazy? I don't even want people to know I'm married to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've met her. She's a very nice woman. Of course she doesn't.
So I wanted to ask you, David, you mentioned about an hour ago that there was an article yesterday in Business Week about all the seed funds.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I didn't see the article yet, and I was curious what you thought about it.
Well, no, basically, it was this article talking about the rise of the seed investor. It was a little... this particular article was about Google and the influence of Google and the future, you know, that there are companies that have this kind of follow-on set of companies that are formed and investors, whatever. And so in this instance, there have been lots of people who have made a lot of money from Google, and they're investing in companies. And it profiled in particular Aidan Senkut, who we know well. And Aidan's invested in all sorts of interesting companies, and he's taking the idea of being an investor, an angel investor, very seriously, right? I mean, there are ways to do it as I've invested in my friends or whatever. But what I see is all these a lot of these more serious angel fund like angels. And so I think it was Business Week then listed like the top 20 or 25 angels, and it was one of their, you know, slideshow things, so you could click through. And so it had Jeff Clavier, and it had Mark Andreessen, and it had the PayPal Mafia, etc.
Mike Maples
and
what about Michael Dearing?
I'm sure it had Dearing, although if it didn't, great it guy. Should Dearing. Is this like that was a mini suck up? Should we suck up to
Deering? I'm having breakfast with him, like, next week.
All right. So we could suck up to Deering every show. Let's do that. Just a quick mini suck up to Michael Dearing.
Okay.
We love you, Michael Dearing. Okay. So it had all these guys, and it was sort of and each one had a little snippet about how they were addressing
it. Was there any kind of conclusion about it, or any...
No, it was just sort of like, look, this is it did the typical, it takes less money to start a company, and so these, kind of super angels are the future of the venture business kind of thing, which, more power to them. I think the more money we get to smart entrepreneurs, the better, and that's great. On the other hand, as I've said before, if a company is succeeding and wants to leverage that success, they tend to then want and need more money, right? It's very rare that a company can make enough money that it can plug back into the business to accelerate it at a speed that makes sense.
I had a call.
What, Mary? This is my assistant, Mary. Mary, I can't hear you. What? What are you saying?
I'm not playing.
Oh, no.
3:30 canceled.
3:30?
Canceled.
Oh. So this just in for Mary. My 2:30 is here, but my 3:30 has canceled.
Alrighty.
Thank you, Mary.
I had a call from one of our large investors yesterday, who is an investor in one of these C-type funds, and he wanted to just discuss, you know, what they were thinking about it, and they were thinking they were looking at some more of these seed funds. And we talked for maybe 20 minutes, and at the end of the discussion, I said, well, you know, where are you coming out on this? And his reaction was, well, if it's one of these seed funds is, A, only betting on companies that they believe are going to be thunder lizards, as Mike Maples calls them, which means big, freestanding, disruptive companies, and they have no intent of selling their companies for modest amounts of money along the way, and the investments they're making are not capital-intensive businesses, then it could work. That was their opinion of it, and I tend to agree with it. But
although it's sort of interesting to think, right? Because Mike Maples, who you know, we know Mike well. He was here at August's office for a period of time, and he's invested in lots of interesting companies. One of his most interesting companies is Chegg, right? And Chegg's immensely capital intensive.
Right.
They've had to raise a ton of money because it's a book rental, and you need to buy these books ahead of time and rent them out, so there's an obvious inventory cost. And yet Chegg is doing great. In fact, Dan Rosenzweig just joined the company as a CEO, which is sort of stunning, right? I mean, Dan was this very senior guy at Yahoo, really great, smart guy, was in PE for a while, but it was clear that he was just sort of doing that, waiting to find the next interesting thing. And then he ran, what, Rock Band, right? Which, big business, interesting, but I guess someone convinced him, hey, there's a real opportunity here in Chegg. And Chegg's a thunder lizard, no question. Like, if it's successful, it could really make and break that fund. But it's not exactly fits that model.
But the multiples on return may not be what they're looking for, because there's so much dilution with all the follow-on financing that this was a discussion with the investor.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation.
That, you know, then there's the argument, they were saying the argument that some of the seed funds have is that, well, they'll have extra funds and then they'll double down and triple down on their good ones. But their concern about that is you get one of those wrong and you've doubled and tripled down on one, and that one doesn't make it and it wipes out the returns of your fund. Mm. So from what I was hearing from the big LP is they're still kind of not sure about it. Like, they're optimistic if it's somebody like Mike Maples who's going for a big one. But if people are espousing that their business model is going to be to get in at a very low price and sell the company for $30 or $50 or $80 million, they weren't interested in that.
Well, because it can't work, right? If you look at that, it can work
if you're the investor, the GP.
Why?
Because you make $20 million fees, and you turn it into $80 million, and it's just one investor, and you're getting 20% of that.
But you're not going to make it. You're not going to turn it into $80 million, right? Because what is the likelihood that you sell a company, right? The theory behind that is, oh, well, I can sell a disproportionate number of my companies to a Google or a Yahoo, whatever, for $50 million.
But Aiden seems to be doing that.
But you just can't, like, the likelihood that you sell even a third of your companies are sufficiently successful to be sold at those numbers even, I think approaches zero. So, yeah, Aiden's done a great job, but is it sustainable? I mean, Aiden's, how many investments has Aiden made?
He's made like 25 or so, but his returns, he's more than returned his fund already in exits.
Yep. So, you know.
So maybe we'll get him on here and we'll get him from the left and I'll get him from the right.
We should do that because, you know, we try and only bring on people with accents. We had Jeff Clavier. Actually, I've been meaning to say, Craig, could you put on an accent?
What are you talking about?
See, exactly.
That's stupid.
You're giving me flashbacks to my incredibly onerous train trip with the Fräulein, who actually spoke English.
Funny thing is, she didn't speak German.
Which means
you just didn't know that.
She was not a free. She was just smiling.
You were trying so hard. She was like, is that Italian?
That is funny.
Anyway,
I think that we have come to the portion of our program. No, wait. We have to suck up.
John Lilly.
That's who we're going for.
I like that guy.
John Lilly is the CEO of Mozilla. Do you know John?
I've met John.
Super smart guy. Was, you know, John's done consumer, he's done enterprise, and now he's been running and driving. He's been kind of driving the bus over there at Mozilla and Firefox, and done a great job of that. And
Why are you sucking up to John Lilly?
We were hanging out with him the other night, and he's just a super smart guy, and we like him. Is there anything more, you know?
No. Usually there's an alternative.
Do we need it? Do we need a reason to suck up to someone?
We usually have one.
We have one, but we're not going to state it.
Oh. Yeah.
That's why it's ulterior.
That's right. We're going to be the first company sold to Mozilla.
We're selling August to Mozilla.
August Capital. Mozilla is going to buy August Capital.
We're selling it for $3.2 billion.
There you go.
No, that's not enough return.
What?
Just Fund 5?
Yeah.
Oh, Fund 5, fine.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about all of August.
Well, but the other one's already
that's
gone.
That's not happening. No, we got $2 billion under management. How is $3.5 billion sufficient? Come on, Howard, think big. I thought you were going to say trillion.
What about, like, $3 billion?
Yeah, exactly. Like, great. This is how Howard invests. You're fired. You were my partner until 2 seconds ago.
See you later.
But it's been nice knowing you.
Anyway, that ends VentureCast for the day.
There you go. Thank you, John Lilly, for doing such a fine job.
Thank
I enjoyed
you,
my Firefox. And Craig Severson, do you have any parting thoughts for us?
Great to be here. Keep up the good work. I'll keep editing your shows.
Come visit.
I don't edit, actually. I'm just you processing.
You process and append.
I'm not editing because I used to edit.
You used to, yeah. All right. For those of you who are listening, finish listening to this show, which will be fine. It'll sound good and whatever else, but you'll finish listening and then go back, 2 years?
To the archive.
Go to the archive and listen to a show that Craig and I did a couple of years ago where Craig literally came in with different microphones. He had one for himself that did a good job with his voice and one for me. I mean, it's just a different story altogether. You would edit out the ums and ahs, yes. And, you know, I mean... Yeah, exactly.
And coughs.
Sorry. And you'd edit out Howard altogether. You'll notice there's no Howard in those shows.
Why, it's called the David Hornick Show.
That's why it's the David Hornick Show. Yeah, we all learned that.
You are the master. I mean, I think it's awesome that Yahoo has you working on social media stuff. But
thank you.
But man, oh man, like that digital media goodness, you got to do some more of that.
I'll get back to it. I did too much of it. It's kind of nice.
Is that right? You're
just
relieved.
To be designing and have files that are less than 3 gigs each. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, exactly. I do miss it though. Like, you know, man, when we made the program, Craig and I made the program for the lobby 2 years ago, and it was this newspaper, and so it was like being in a college newspaper again. We had to lay it out, and we pulled an all-nighter.
All-nighter.
I mean, we should have probably started earlier, but we really didn't, and we had to get it off to the printer. It was totally like up against the deadline, and we literally worked through the night until I had to go take my kids to school something, and we printed out the final pieces, and
we're still friends.
Yeah. That was awesome. All right, here ends the reminiscing portion of VentureCast. I'm David Hornick from August Capital.
And I'm Howard Hardenbaum, also from August Capital, at least for now.
Oh, that's beautiful.